in class, so I didn't really plan to follow it either, so I don't have extra copies of it. In any event, we are in Hebrews 11, of course, well-known chapter on faith and the great examples of faith to the past, which from the progression of the book seems to be the author using these various examples to encourage these Hebrew Christians along the way of how he's been speaking to them in this book. And in particular, I think the context leads in from the last several verses of chapter 10. Beginning in verse 35, the author wrote, "Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay, but my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and persevere their souls." And then from this encouragement, he then proceeds into the chapter. From that quotation in verses 37 and 38, may be familiar to you. That's from Habakkuk chapter 2. The Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 1 in verse 17 also quotes Habakkuk there. Specifically there, he quotes 2 and 4. And Paul again quotes Habakkuk in chapter 3, I believe, of the book of Galatians. So the intro he gives to this chapter, he's encouraging them to maintain their faith. I'll write nice and big for the people in the back. And links it to confidence, right? And their reward. And then the second concept he expresses here that he encourages them in is endurance. That they have need for endurance, that they might, and I'll just call it, obey. They'll keep God's commands, and that they might receive the promise. So, at least for my reading, and remember, of course, we all know the chapter divisions, the verse divisions, or so forth, are just a convenience, and they're not actually reflecting any breaks in the author's thinking, that this is then what leads into chapter 11. He is trying to encourage them from the examples of these great heroes of faith to have faith and confidence in God and therefore receive the reward, and as part of that, have endurance for what he's already mentioned earlier in chapter 10, for example, verse 32, "But recall the former days when after you enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those so treated." So these Christians to whom he's written have already suffered persecution, already suffered for the faith, and he's encouraging them, remember how you have suffered and endured and continue to do so. So then, after that encouragement, we then lead into chapter 11. Tony, would you please read verses 1 through 6 of chapter 11?
"Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the men of old gained approval. By faith they understand that the world was prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gift, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. By faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God took him, but he obtained the same testimony. And before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. And without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of those who seek him."
Thank you very much. This course, particular verse 1, verse 6, very familiar to us. But from verse 1, how does the author describe faith to these Hebrews? From verse 1. and it may depend on the translation you're using, what some say substance, I believe the King James says. What's another, perhaps more, one of the more modern literal translations? Assurance. That's probably the New American Standard, English Standard. I think even the NIV use assurance. Assurance of things, right? Hope for. So assurance and hope. And then what is the second description given? Conviction, right? Conviction of that which is not seen. And then he will go and illustrate this point with some immediate examples. So what's significant from this, and if you want to just put this in perhaps even more modern English, is being sure of what you hope for. Probably some of the less literal translations use that. And certain of things not seen. So you can see from this, sometimes it's rendered substance, which has unfortunately been a little distracting sometimes in that in terms of understanding this verse. But I think what he's taking from this, we come certainty and surety in our faith in the things, as he's just said, in the promise that, as he's just said in chapter 10, in what's been promised and what your reward is. That this is not something that is hoped for in the colloquial way that hope is used today, but rather hope leads to assurance, and the basis of our hope is the assurance of that which God has promised. And we're going to see that reinforced through the chapter. And I think there's an overall point that will come from this. How, given this description of faith, how then should that faith be expressed towards the world? Because that's really what he's leading into with these Christians. It isn't simply that look towards your ultimate reward, is that in looking towards that reward by faith, how you now live in the face of what you're enduring in the world, and that faith will permit you to do that. So since this instruction on faith is to prepare these Christians and exhort them to live in the world and face what there is coming upon them in the world, this idea of being assured or sure and certain, how then should that faith be expressed towards, as he's talking about, the sufferings, the reproaches that Christians then and in different ways Christians today still face? Willing, right? And that certainly is... He bookends this chapter with that same exhortation, right? He ends chapter 10 with, you have need of endurance, and then he begins chapter 12 with the similar exhortation, willing to endure. And what underlies that is both of these ideas, and maybe the other way, the way of sort of encapsulizing both of these concepts, is confidence. Confidence in the face of that which the world is presenting the Christian, that by faith you can have confidence to face those trials, face those sufferings, and endure them in the face of the world. These aren't my ideas, but Barclay has a commentary on Hebrews, and he quotes from James, three ideas that James Moffat had from this as to what faith is. One, that it's a belief in God against the world, and that the author has already encouraged these Christians that they've done that, as we've already looked at in chapter 10. So a belief in God against the world. The world's persecuting you to achieve that you would abandon the faith, and instead faith causes you to believe in God against that persecution and continue in the faith. Belief in the Spirit against the senses, And we'll get that, I think, from chapter 3, verse 3 rather, as well. And then finally, belief in the future against the present. And certainly that last one, given this context of suffering that seems to underlie the entire epistle, given how throughout the epistle he's encouraging them to say, stay steadfast, to endure in the faith, that suffering would seem to be an overlay to the entire epistle. And that, I think, that comment, the idea of look to the future and believe in that versus what you're enduring now. Yes, sir, Bob.
No, you're talking about how the world was persecuting them. And I think still at this time, the time that the Hebrews were written, the Jews were persecuting Christians particularly. And, you know, there was a lot of tension between having to keep the old law, that is, coming to Christ through Judaism, and not. You know, and so much of the earlier epistles address that issue of the problems with the Judaizing teachers. And I think it's interesting here, when he's talking about faith, he goes back beyond before the giving of the law. He's talking about Abel and Enoch and so on. So he's making the point, if you will, that faith preceded all the ritual and tradition that the Judaizing teachers particularly and others perhaps were trying to overlay onto Christianity.
And I think that's correct. You know, whether it's whoever wrote the epistle, right? You see that same principle pursued by the Apostle Paul in both the epistle to the Galatians and the epistle to the Romans, where he holds up Abraham, not Moses, as the archetype of faith and as the archetype of God's promises to the saints. Now, verse 3, he references the creation account, right? As the first measure of faith, which is interesting. Why is that event significant for our faith? Absolutely. Tony, yes.
Kind of dovetailing a bit there, because one of the thoughts, when you were talking about the assurance and the confidence and things along that line there, there's a lot of people that have faith in other things. So it's like, how are you assured that you have a true faith in these things and not something that's going to lead you down a false hope? And I think this verse kind of gets to that, because when you talk about going back and by faith, you know that God created these things, you recognize Him as the authority. Because if He created everything in this world, He created us, therefore He has inherent authority over us, so that we must submit ourselves to Him, and we're going to have that true hope and that confidence that of what lies ahead, then we must be submitting ourselves truly to Him.
Yes, the creation account, of course, declares God's sovereignty and in. When Nelson was studying in Genesis, and we studied that part, that's sort of one of the overarching messages before any of the divisions among men and the creation of nations and languages and so forth. God was sovereign and God was the creator. Of course, from that, the idea of power to work His will. So if His will is to give salvation to His people, He has both the sovereignty and the power to do it. It, at least to me, demonstrates also God's love and mercy to the world. If it's His creation, if it's the fruit of His work, and we know at the time, for example, the Genesis account, that He viewed it as good, then it evidences to us God's love for His creation and also His interest in His creation. And I think, although not directly stated, a lot of what we see in the first part of the book is references to the nature of God and contrast the nature of God to what, at least if they were in contrast to pagan gods, and of course His involvement in the world. So he's not aloof, and all of these, I think, go as both Jim and Tony were pointing out, these are all things that call you to worship God because they demonstrate that He is the one who ought to be worshipped and that He has demonstrated His desire for that worship and His interest in providing the promises that He's made to His people. Yes, sir. Yes, and I think you certainly see that with how he characterizes the faith of Noah, of Moses, and even of Abraham, and what they did in the face of those things that were presented to them at the time. That even by faith they endured it, say, without having seen that which was promised to them. All right, and then question three, not to bypass Abel and Enoch. I think one of the things you see from that is, as to Abel, is that the living and enduring nature of faith. Even though Abel is dead, his faith speaks today. Now, of course, at the time, it was Abel's blood speaking against his brother, and that's going to be referenced over in chapter 12. This, I think, is the author referencing Enoch in a more symbolic way, that Enoch's faith still testifies Abel's faith still testifies today. And as to Enoch, there's a lot of mystery associated with that. We sort of take what the Hebrew writer says here to mean that Enoch didn't die and he was taken up. That would seem to be what he's saying. But even if what he's saying is that Enoch evidences that the one who walks by faith pleases God, and therefore the one who lives by faith and walks by faith, death is no disruption of his fellowship with God, and it is as though it never occurred because he's taken to God. The same point, of course, is made, is that Enoch pleased God and therefore enjoyed fellowship with God. So that leads into, right, he says of Enoch, for it was testified of Enoch that he pleased God. And then he brings us back to what he has already talked about in verse 1, which is, and without faith it is impossible to please God. So that's the illustration Enoch gives to us. So how did Enoch please God? Of course, it was by faith. And from that, the significance of faith, of course, it's without, you must have faith, as he says, to please God. And I think his point of that is, you know, with the example of Enoch, as I said, however, whatever is meant with that sort of somewhat enigmatic description of Enoch, Enoch's fellowship with God was never broken because Enoch walked by faith and therefore he pleased God. And so faith without faith it's impossible to please God. So faith is the foundation of your fellowship with God. And then he's going to illustrate this idea throughout. And of course, by faith, we mean, as is used throughout, New Testament, is faith is trust, that you trust in God. It isn't mere belief, but that it is a conviction, as he said, an assurance that grows out of what we know about the nature of God. And that, for example, is why it naturally leads into what he said in verse 3, which is, by faith we know that God made the things that are out of things that are not seen, because it's the nature of God that gives us that assurance and that conviction in him. Okay. Let's look at some of the examples then that are given, and I know by time that it will appear we're giving shorter shrift to the machine gun of examples in the second half of the chapter, but that, I suppose, is in the nature of things. All right. Aaron, would you please read verses 7 through 12, please.
By faith Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared his heart for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world, and became the heir of the righteousness that is according to faith. By faith Abraham, which he was called, obeyed, by going out to the place which he was to be for inheritance. He went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived in
Thank you. From this, it's not just Noah and Abraham, it's also Noah, Abraham, and Sarah, so I don't want to leave Sarah out either. What trait did they have in common in the various events that the author references, for example, in verse 7 and 8, 10 and 11? Well, right. Faith and expressed in those particular events in what? Right.
Noah, who's had to build an ark to save himself from the flood. They'd never seen anything like that. My brother, and Abraham, and just going off to the land of God, know that you're going to receive these things. Okay. And Sarah, who will pass childbirth.
Right. Yeah. And that's true. And I think I would describe it that they all had to look past their current events, right? As he said, from chapter 10, to look forward with endurance to that which has been promised. From some of the phrases that seem to indicate that is events not seen, right? As to Abraham, he did not know where he was going. That's always encouraging. Not that I've ever experienced that, but I'm not doing it by promise. Okay, and as Tony said, they were all faced with that prospect that if they responded in faith, it was in essence, remember from what we talked about with Moffat, it was against what the world was presenting at the time, and it was against the present events that they were facing. They both, certainly in the instance of Noah and Abraham and Sarah, showed endurance in that. Noah built that ark for how long, right? Decades upon decades, probably suffering ridicule from people who said, "What's rain?" And of course, Abraham and Sarah similarly had to endure. Andy, yes.
Their faith, if you look at it, they didn't go beyond their faith. Abraham, Noah built the ark, did what God said, but didn't try to do anything else. Abraham, he went to the land of promise. He didn't try to conquer that land of promise. He knew that God would one day, even may not in his lifetime,
Yes, and that's certainly true, and I'll have another thought on that in a second. One other phrase, certainly in the instance of Abraham, and Tony mentioned this, that the phrase uses that Abraham went out. So this faith caused them to act. It wasn't merely that they believed, but that they went out, endured, and took risks. Certainly what Abraham did was risky by this faith, and again, against what was presented to them. Yes, Peggy. Well, and later, in fact, in referencing Moses, he talks the idea of Moses seeing God and emphasizing Moses' relationship and his knowing of God as the basis then of his faith. I mentioned Barclay earlier. He had a few observations from this instance, that faith accepts God's word. And this is sort of along the lines of what Andy mentioned as well. Both Noah and Abraham received an instruction from God that seemed against common sense, and yet by faith they accepted that and did as God instructed. They were not deterred by mockery. This one perhaps important for us to keep in mind today. Certainly I think Noah was probably mocked various times. Abraham, perhaps not so much, since his father did go with him, but certainly he was frightened at various times. We know that. Their faith, in the instance of Noah, at least, was a judgment on others. And while Noah was a preacher of righteousness, presumably his preaching was, this destruction is coming, and for them to repent. But his very life, his faith and obedience, I think we also see was a judgment against the world. And then, of course, this going back to Bob's earlier point, which is that even these luminaries of the faith back before the Mosaic Law, they were made righteous by their faith. And so as Habakkuk says, the just shall live by his faith. Yes, sir. Yes, and also he's an interesting example of how faith responds to the nature of God and responds to the revelation of God and also responds to the reproach of God, because you see at the end of Job he repents in dust and ashes, but that is also part of his faith. Yes, sir. I think you can, verse 13 through 16 really emphasizes that, right? Verse 13 says, These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. And so what we get from that, I call it the vision of faith. It's not just that, you know, the idea of we walk by faith and not by sight. I mean, that's certainly, that's it. But really, I think what the author emphasizes here, what he says in verse 13, they died in faith not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar. So it was as to both Noah and Abraham and Sarah, that even though they had not received these things, it was as though they had. Their faith gave them a conviction and a certainty that they could act based on having these promises that God gave them. Now, of course, being men and women, we see from their lives there that there are peaks and valleys in that, of course. Right. But what the author is emphasizing here is that for them, their faith made it as though it was. By faith, we know that God made the things we see out of things that are not seen. And it's that same conviction that Abraham and Sarah and Noah had as to the promises given them, that they could then act. They could go out, they could build the ark, and they could by faith do these things, knowing that they would be received, even though they hadn't received them then, and even though they eventually died without having received them in the sense of the fulfillment, beyond, of course, other than Isaac. That was the only promise that Abraham and Sarah saw fulfilled in them. And they didn't seek the comfort of the familiar, right? They were, by contrast, saw themselves as strangers. So they not only, that faith not only made them certain of the promises they would receive, that faith shaped how they viewed themselves. That they viewed themselves as strangers and pilgrims in this world, waiting to achieve the place, to go to the place that was actually their home, that again they knew by faith. So the faith not only gave them certainty in God's promises, it also shaped how they viewed themselves. That they viewed their identity and their lives in light of that faith, and as defined by that faith. Let's move into a bit more on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is verses 17 through 22. And Bob, would you read verses 17 through 22, please?
By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he had received promises, offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that Isaac shall thy seed be called. According to the telling that God was able to raise him up, he was from the dead, from whence also he received him in the first time. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph in worship, leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, who died, made mention of the dreaming of the children of Israel, and gave commandments concerning his bones.
Thank you very much. The lead into this is from verse 16, that because of their faith, God is not ashamed to be called their God. And so again, that I think illustrating the certainty of faith, that and faith as the basis of fellowship, but again, all resting on the nature of God, that those who have faith in God, God has fellowship with them and will not abandon them. The example given is Abraham and Isaac, of course. Again, a familiar one about the length to which faith demands. And that, of course, is Abraham was willing to surrender what would have been most precious to him and his wife, at the time, which is his son, the son of promise, Isaac. And, but why, the Hebrew author says, why is it that Abraham was willing to do that or had that? Why was his faith, did it allow him to do that? That's right, because he had faith of God's power over death. And in each of these examples, right, whether it's Abraham, in that instance it was Abraham and death was present because Abraham was going to be the instrument of it. But for Isaac, he blessed Jacob and Esau. And at what point in Isaac's life did that happen? As Isaac was dying. So he blessed Jacob and Esau in the face of death. And then by faith, Jacob, the author helps us here, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on top of his staff. And then for Joseph, by faith, Joseph, when his end was near. So for each of these men, their faith, right, was in the face of death. More graphically, in the case of Abraham, and more inevitably in the face of Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, since the end of their lives had come, and yet they trusted God's, again, His power over death. So I think that's one example that one instruction we get from each of these examples. The consistency through each of these is faith in God, trust in God's promises and His power, even in the face of death. And from each of these men, I think, sort of building off a comment Andy made earlier, they did not provide for their own future. They blessed their sons, but they blessed them according to what God had revealed to them and entrusted them to God, rather than in some way seeking to provide for their own heritage. And even in the instance of Joseph, he simply said, when the Exodus comes, right, at death, he could not only trust God for the blessing of his sons, he trusted God for centuries down into the future for when the Exodus, when the deliverance of the Jews from Egypt would come. At that time, take my bones with you. So that is sort of the culmination, I think, of emphasizing that faith allows us to trust God, His sovereignty, His power, His faithfulness, even in the face of death. Then the author moves into the example of Moses in verses 23 through 28, and I'm sorry, 23 through 29. I can't read my own sheet. James, could you read verses 23 through 29, please? Thank you. The first example given here really even predates Moses, right? That in the sense of Moses being the chosen one of God, that verse 23, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edicts. That's something you go into the book of Exodus. While that's not said of Moses' parents in the book of Exodus, it is said of the Hebrew midwives, right, that they feared God more than the king, and therefore refused to obey the king's commands against the male children of Israel. And then we see various examples of Moses, events in his life, and choices that he made by faith. Right? He refused to be known as Pharaoh's daughter. So he, in essence, he refused the throne and the power and worldly power. And he did so by faith. It says, right, that he chose to be mistreated with the people of God over the pleasures of sin for a season. And, you know, I think while the contrasting, you know, he gave up worldly power, he refused sin. The other thing we have to understand is that in doing each of those, he chose persecution. It wasn't as though they just said, you know, Moses, would you like to do this ungodly thing? No, that's fine. Okay, well, go to the library and read a book. He, in giving these things up, had to take on something that was persecuting of him and regarded, and the author here gives us interesting insight to Moses and Christ, but he says, disgrace for the sake of Christ, there being, I think, more explicit the idea that in each of these instances, Moses is choosing reproach, choosing persecution over the world. And then it talks about him leaving Egypt, and then the reference to his perseverance and the keeping of the Passover. So for each of the, and then at the end, of course, the people themselves more broadly in their faith to pass through the Red Sea. So from each of these, how should faith respond to the world? I mean, that to me seems to me the point that we get from Moses. How should faith respond to the world, particularly, you know, the good parts of the world? I mean, it's a little easier to say, you know, faith means you shouldn't do something that will ruin your life and make you miserable. But that isn't what Moses was refusing here. In fact, he was refusing what would have been pleasant and taking on what people might have said would make you miserable. So how does faith respond to the world? And I guess the other part of that is, how rational and reasonable would the world consider Moses' trust in God, for example, in the Passover and in the passing through the Red Sea? I mean, in each of these, right, he's denying the world. That's probably one that we can understand fairly readily. So he's denying the world and what the world offers, but he's doing that even in the sense that it's better to take on the persecution that comes by faith and the suffering that comes by faith than the, quote, good things that would come from the world. Yes, sir.
Yes.
And writing of Moses, the author said in when he was considering the reproach of Christ, greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward, which is the idea that he just talked about. Is not, and that's the point, is that faith doesn't just let you see, well, God told me that these are all bad things and I don't want any part of them. Because that is one lesson we get from this, because reason would have told Moses that this is a good thing. And the world would have told him that that was a good thing. Probably all the great education he got from the Egyptians in the king's palace told him these were all good things. But faith tells him not only that there are entanglements associated with that, but that God's promises are a greater thing and a more certain thing than even this, the throne or the pleasures of sin, which seem so tangible and immediate at the time that he faced them. And so Moses could say, no, I'm going to repudiate those and go into exile, knowing that the promises of God are better, and of course come back and do all that he did when he returned to Egypt, culminating in leading the people out, because he believed he was looking to that reward, and therefore it was more certain, more and of far greater value than even these things that were right in front of him at the time. Yes, Bob. That's right. Tony?
You just mentioned how this is reflected in the Passover and the Red Sea. Things like, and really, when you stop and think about the Red Sea, if you go back, I know we're out of time, but here it's talking about the children of Israel having the faith to go through the Red Sea. Well, right before they go, what were they doing? They were already
complaining. Right.
Complaining. You brought us out here to get to die because they could see the army coming. Yet he says that they, by faith, went. And it's like, what is it that caused them? All of a sudden, they saw that solar fire protecting. They saw
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what is necessarily involved in this idea that Moses is looking to the reward, again, and this is the instruction we have to have. We have to recognize that whatever is before us now is less certain and not as valuable as that which God has promised. But also, when you have the idea of reward, is that God's nature, and He will do what is necessary to create that faith, to reward that faith, and to encourage that faith to endurance, so that His people can live and endure to the end to receive that reward. So the whole idea of a reward implies both the giver of it and the one who's looking to it to receive it. And I think what we see from these examples, God's nature, He will do that which is necessary to encourage and create that faith and reward that faith in the end. Okay, well, we're out of time. Thanks very much. Next week, Rod will be looking at, well, he may be out of town, but so maybe Steve, is Steve and you next week? So it'll be chapter 12. And you can say whatever you like out of chapter 11, too.